like to call to order this Water Management Board meeting scheduled for March 8th, 2023. I'd like to ask for the roll call.
Gomez?
Here.
Dixon?
Here.
Freeman?
Here.
Holzbauer?
Here.
And Larson?
Here. We have a quorum. I would like to welcome everyone participating in today's meeting or listening online. This meeting is streaming live on SD.net, a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. The meeting is also being recorded, and the audio will be made available online following the meeting. To find the audio recording online, do a web search for South Dakota Boards and Commissions Portal. Follow the link and select the name of the board. For the benefit of our online listeners, I request that all participants, including board members, please identify yourself when speaking. And anyone participating remotely is reminded to keep their microphones or phones muted at all times unless speaking. At this time, we need to adopt the final agenda for the meeting. Ron, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, we had an order issued granting a motion to continue the 10 o'clock item, part of the 10 o'clock item. So if you look at your agenda, everything from the word and at the very end of the first line and the second line down should be removed. So the only thing left would be to consider pre-hearing motions or appeals, if any, for the water permit application number 2850. So the actual contested case itself on the application will happen at a later date in May.
Do we have a motion to adopt this final agenda then?
Freeman, so moved.
Do we have a second?
Dixon, second.
Motion to adopt the final agenda is hereby approved.
I think we need to pause for 1 second. We have to take a vote on that. We have a motion and a second. We just need a vote, a roll call. We don't need a roll call. Just a voice vote.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. You want to do a roll call, Bill, or a voice vote?
Yeah, let's take a roll call.
Comas?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer? Leo? Larson?
Aye. Motion is adopted then for the final agenda. I ask the board, are there any conflicts, disclosures, and requests for state board waivers by any of the board members? Hearing none, the next item on the agenda is to adopt the December 7th, 2022 board minutes. Do I have a motion to adopt those minutes?
Freeman, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Holzbauer, second.
Motion to adopt the December 7th, 2022 board minutes is approved. Can we have a roll call?
Gomez?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye. Motion is hereby adopted to adopt those board minutes from December 7th, 2022. The next item on the agenda is to set the May 3 and 4, 2023 meeting dates and locations. Do I have a motion to set that meeting for May 3rd and 4th of 2023?
And we would suggest Imperial as the location.
Pier.
So moved. Freeman.
Do I have a second?
Ms. Comas, second.
Motion is adopted. Can I have a roll call, please?
Comas?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye. The motion is adopted to set the May 3rd and 4th, 2023 meeting to start at 9:30 in Pier at the Floyd Matthew Training Center. The next item on the agenda is the public comment period in accordance with SDCL 1-25-1. Do we have any individuals with public comment?
No one in the room in Pier anyway. I don't know if there's anybody online.
Great. Hearing none, to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is a status and review of the water rights litigation.
This is David McVeigh. There's no update. Nothing's changed.
Great. That was a quick one.
Yep.
Next item is to update on DANR activities.
This is Eric Gronlund, Chief Engineer of the Water Rights Program with DANR. I have just a couple minor issues to discuss with the board, and then I'm going to hand it off to Whitney Kilt to do a brief update on some dam issues that are happening around the state. I guess the first thing is, winter has been busy for us. If you looked at your board packet on the water permit applications that have been approved over the last couple of months, you'll see it almost goes for two pages, which is more than what we're accustomed to seeing between board meetings. So with the drought that we had in 2021 and 2022 has really caused an uptick in applications and kept us very busy. I just wanted to let the board know that, you know, the processing of the water and permit applications is really our priority here, and we've been trying to meet the statutory deadlines associated with that. The other issue I wanted to discuss briefly with you was in regards to the legislature. They're still in session here, I think, for today. I guess while other programs in DANR had bills across the street there, it was really a pretty light session with water rights, but I did want to highlight two bills that we dealt with. The first one was House Bill 1134A. Basically, it was 1134, and then it was amended to an A. And it proposed to amend Title 46-1, which is the Water Rights Code. It sought that before a state agency or political subdivision may issue a permit authorizing the construction of a channel, canal, or other shoreline modification that would expand the water surface area of an artificial water body by 4,000 square feet, that the person seeking that permit would need the consent of a majority of the property owners around the lake or the water body. DANR testified in opposition to that bill, largely on grounds that when a water right permit or a flood control permit, which are the primary permitting authorities in Title 46 of the Water Rights Code, when those type of applications are filed, there's a well-established water rights procedure affording public participation and a public hearing before this board. If this bill were to have passed, it would have basically circumvented the process depending on the consent of a majority of the property owners around that water body. Additionally, the bill's language included in their other political subdivisions beyond and their permitting authority that are beyond Title 46. That was heard before the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee, and it was deferred to the 41st day on a 12-0 vote. So that bill did not pass. The other bill that I want, it really doesn't impact this board very much, but I wanted to highlight was House Bill 1196. A year ago, the legislature provided funding for making improvements around the Capitol complex, largely Capitol Lake area and things on that order. If you were in Pier today, you would see based on that there's active dredging occurring on Capitol Lake right now with excavators on pontoons out there basically removing the sediments and the goose poop, for lack of a better word, to be honest with you. That cost quite a bit more than what was anticipated, and the legislature, basically, specifically House Bill 1196, provided an additional, basically, $5.2 million of expenditure authority. So, and basically specifies the use of that is supposed to be for plugging of the flowing well, supplying water to Capitol Lake, replacing the water sources for Capitol Lake, and preserving and accommodating additional memorials and improvements. I guess the reason I bring that up is over there, the what's known as the Flaming Fountain, that flame has gone out. All signs are that well is at its end of its life with its casing, and to some degree is somewhat of a ticking time bomb as far as needing to be plugged. And so we're happy to see that money be put forth for that effort. So far, that bill has passed both the House and the Senate and was delivered to the governor. I think it's still awaiting signature there. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Whitney to discuss a couple of dams that we're dealing with repair on in the state right now. I think she has a PowerPoint presentation that Ron will load up.
Thank you, Eric. Go ahead whenever you're ready, Whitney.
Yep. Good morning, members of the board. This is Whitney Kills of the Water Rights Program. As you're probably aware, over the last few legislative sessions, there's been an amount of funding put towards rehabbing and doing various projects around several of the state-owned and state-regulated dams. Here this morning, just to update you on where some of those projects are at. So the first dam we're going to talk about is Elm Lake. It is in Brown County. It is a school public lands dam. It also serves as part of the City of Aberdeen's water supply system. It is a Category 1 high hazard dam. In the 2019 legislative session, there was approximately $500,000 appropriated for spillway repair. There was some manger damage up there from the 2019 kind of wet year. At that time, the overall spillway age was in excess of 80 years, so it was very much reaching the end of its design life. And then in July of 2020, the dam experienced the event of record, and I have a couple of pictures from that. Here you can see flows going through the primary spillway up at Elm Lake Dam from that July 2020 event, as well as you can kind of see how much water is going through downstream. And here is the entrance to the secondary spillway during that event also. And after the water level died down, water rights staff were up there to take a look. Here is the condition of the primary after that event. And you can also see some severe erosion occurred at the secondary or emergency spillway up there. So with those initial funds from 2019, the School of Public Lands began design work. As part of that, a comprehensive dam evaluation was done. Basically, it was a full review of the dam and where it stood in relation to current standard of practice across the dam safety industry. As a result of that view, the engineering firm indicated that spillway capacity need to be increased by almost double. That was done through a combination of raising the dam approximately 4 feet and widening the primary spillway. Analysis also of the hydraulics also indicated that a stilling basin was needed on the primary spillway. That's basically an area right at the toe of that concrete chute spillway to kind of dissipate the energy from water flowing over that spillway to prevent erosion. Also, as you saw in the previous picture, that secondary or auxiliary spillway had a significant amount of erosion. There's an identified a need for erosion protection. It was also suggested that that should not operate as frequently as what is possible for it to do. And there is also some slope stability improvements recommended around the low-level outlet. In the 2021 legislative session, approximately $9 million was appropriated to school public lands for dam repair, dam improvements. Of that, approximately $6.5 million was for Elm. And then they continued on the design process. Plans and specifications for the project were approved by the Water Rights Program in July 2021. Construction occurred during 2022. And here's, just as they're finishing up work on the primary, as you can see, it's wider. There's much higher walls. You can kind of see the dam raise a little bit. And they also, that flat area down below, that's Spillway Slope, is that additional stilling basin area that they've added to help dissipate energy from flows. That's basically to prevent erosion from occurring immediately at the toe of the spillway. And here is another picture of the spillway as they've just had their first operation and removed the cofferdam upstream, allowing water to flow through. And here is the repair of that secondary auxiliary spillway. You can see that they've added rock riprap in there to kind of fill in the eroded area and also provide erosion protections for future operations. Other dam activities going on in the 2022 legislative session, School and Public Lands asked for $6.5 million to replace the spillway at Richmond Dam that is also located in Brown County. It is another Category 1 high hazard dam. That one also, the spillway is in that 80 plus years age range, so it's reaching the end of its design life. At this time, that initial dam elevation has dam evaluation has mostly wrapped up and they are starting to move into design. Also in the 2022 legislative session, $5.6 million went to the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks for two of their dam projects. One was the spiller replacement and additional design of dam improvements around the Lake Alum Dam in Lincoln County. That is currently under design. And they're getting close to being to the end of design, is my understanding from talking to GF&P staff. Additionally, Newell Dam in Butte County, which is currently under construction. Both of those dams are Category 3 low hazard dams. And this is the new spillway is designed to plan to look like at Newell Dam in Butte County. Basically, that one was damaged also in 2019. And it had a conduit style spillway, so basically like a CMP corrugated metal pipe running through the dam. There's historically been some issues with high flow events and those washing out, so part of the design process was to go to this concrete chute spillway with baffles for energy dissipation there. And that's what I had, just to kind of let you know where projects were at. Are there any questions? All right, thank you.
Any questions from any of the board members? What'd you say, Whitney?
I thought you were done with questions. I just said thank you very much. It sounds like there are no questions.
Thank you for the update. Next item on the agenda is to administer the oath to the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources staff.
Solemnly swear the testimony you'll give in this class today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Bill, this is David. I'm going to take this opportunity. I got to step out, as we discussed, and I'll be back as soon as I can.
Okay. All right. Thanks, David. The next item on the agenda is the appointment of the Rapid Valley Water Master, Nikhilia Steen.
Good morning, board members. My name is Nikhilia Steen. I'm an engineer with the Water Program. The Rapid Valley Conservancy District nominates Kevin Hamm for the 2023 Water Master position and requests the board's approval. For information, Kevin Hamm has been the Water Master since around 2005. Rapid Creek.
Do I have a motion from a board member to appoint Kevin Hamm as the Rapid Valley Water Master?
This is Comas, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Dixon, second.
Motion approved. Can I have the roll call, please?
Comas?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye. Motion so approved to appoint Kevin Hamm as the Rapid Valley Water Master. Thank you, Nikhila, for your time.
Thank you.
You bet. Next item on the agenda are some cancellation considerations, Ron.
Yes, you should have received in your packet a list of water permits and rights that are subject to cancellation. Just a little background again on these that once you get a permit or a right, it can become subject to cancellation due either to abandonment or forfeiture. I don't know where the dinging is coming from, but there's a lot of it. Anyway, on the cancellations, a permit can be lost because it's been abandoned or forfeited. And typically the way that we find out that has occurred is one of two ways. Either we will do an inspection of a permit to license it and go out there and find out, for example, that they never developed it in the first place. In that case, it would be recommended for cancellation due to non-construction. Another very frequent way is we find out through the irrigation questionnaire that's submitted that Jenny is going to be talking about soon, that people are no longer irrigating. Again, maybe they didn't construct, or maybe they've just quit irrigating and have indicated that on their irrigation questionnaire. In either of those events, we will contact the holder of the permit or right to make sure that we're on the same page, that when they say abandoned, for example, they mean abandoned and not just abandoned for 1 year or something like that. So there's contact with them. We then provide a notice of the hearing, which was in your board packet. And in response to those notices, we have not had any contact by anyone opposing any of the cancellations on your list. So with that, our recommendation is the ones listed be canceled for the reasons cited.
Thank you, Ron, for the update. Board, do we have a motion to adopt the recommendation to cancel the permits as noted in the documents for the meet hearing today?
Freeman, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Dixon, second.
Can I have a roll call, please?
Comas?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye. The motion to adopt the cancellations recommendations of the board is adopted. Next item on the agenda is the irrigation questionnaire violations for failure to report 2022 water usage. I believe we're going to get an update from Jenny McGath. Is that correct?
Yep, McMath. Yes. Good morning, members of the board. The report that Ron probably emailed to you and the short list. Today we're here to talk about irrigation questionnaire violations for the 2022 irrigation season. This year we mailed out 3,925 of the forms to 1,992 irrigators for reporting water use. They were supposed to return the forms by December 5th. The cover letter that was sent to them explained ways they could submit the questionnaire, either online, by mail, fax, or just pick up the phone and call. That works as well. We did get over 1,600 of them in online this year, so we're doing a lot better than that. Those who did not return their forms, we sent them a notice January 20th by certified mail. scheduling a hearing before the board today. The notice advised them that the board could take action to either suspend their permit for up to a year, that'd be for the first violation, up to 3 years for the second violation, and cancel for the third violation. Those on the amend list would be amended by the board for to add that qualification to their permit, which gives the board ability to use one of the other issues later on, like suspend or cancel. Today, the water rights staff is recommending that those on the list, violation 1, 2, 3, and the amendments, be amended, the amendment to be effective today. For those on the violation, first, second, third, first violation suspended for up to 1 year, the second for 3 years, the third for cancellation, and those would be, we're recommending, effective April 8th, which would be a month from today. I probably went through that too fast. Do you have any questions?
Any questions from the board members? So violation one, I have a question. This is Larson. Violation one, your recommendation is again what?
Suspension for 1 year.
Okay. And then violation two?
Suspension for 3 years. And then violation three would be for cancellation. And those on the cancellation list, those two water rights are very old. We did go through and check to make sure that they still own the land. We've checked past irrigation questionnaires. They haven't said they've abandoned or wanted to do anything different.
This is Ron Duvall. Just to make clear, I sent you an update to your packet supplement yesterday. There are some that came in since you got that. And I'll share my screen so you can see which one we received by fax here in the last day.
This is Dixon. Jenny, while he's doing that, explain to me again what the amends are, what that means.
The amendment means that to add a qualification to their water permit or their water right that says this permit is approved subject to the irrigation water use questionnaire being submitted each year, goes on the amend, which is just the one gentleman. That qualification is not currently on his permit, so the amendment would add that qualification to the permit, so in the future it could be up for suspension.
I see. Thank you.
Yes.
You should now see on your screen, there's several that we received from Jeff DeVries that should be deleted from that list before the board takes action. So you're aware of that.
So Mr. DeVries sent in his questionnaires?
Yes, he faxed them in last night. And then he called this morning to make sure that we received the facts.
Thank you. Now, this is Larson. Any more questions or comments from the board members? Hearing none, do I have a motion to adopt the VANR's recommendation to cancel the permits per the list just recently provided by Ron?
This is Comas, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Dixon, second.
Can I have a roll call, please?
Can I ask a question? What is the motion for?
Sorry, the motion is to adopt the VANR's recommendation to cancel the permits or suspend the permits as noted in Mr. Duvall's recent update that he just shared with us.
Thank you. Comas?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
And Larson?
Aye. Motion is hereby adopted to follow the ANR's recommendation and cancel the permits per Mr. Duvall's recent list.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is to consider the water permit application number 8614-3, Lewis and Clark Regional Water System. I understand we're going to hear from Mr. Mathewitz.
Good morning, members of the board. I am Water Rights Staff Engineer Adam Mathewitz. Water permit application 8614-3 for the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System was unopposed as the Chief Engineer recommended approval. I'm going to be talking about it today to describe a study that was done to aid us in reviewing recharge from the Missouri Elk Point Aquifer, which is the aquifer this application proposes to appropriate water from. But we'll start with a little background on the application. Application 8614-3 proposes to appropriate 8,277 acre-feet annually from 12 existing wells located in various areas of Section 15, Section 22, Section 27, all in Township 32 North, Range 4 East, off of the 6th Prime Meridian, which is also known as the Nebraska Survey. This area is just south of Vermilion, a couple of miles, and it's also known as the Mulberry Bend Wellfield for Lewis and Clark. As I said, they're proposing to withdraw water from the Missouri Elk Point Aquifer. That is a glacial sand and gravel that underlies the floodplain of the Missouri River from Yankton down to the southeast corner of the state. The main discussion point that I want to talk about, though, is how we are calculating recharge for this aquifer. Within the last year, the South Dakota Geologic Survey, our sister program within the Department of Ag and Natural Resources, completed a study determining how much recharge was induced from the Missouri River into the aquifer based on pumping as done by Lewis and Clark Regional Water System. They ran several models, and their publication that they produced had two different model runs included. First was a 31-day model run that concluded that at Lewis and Clark's currently permitted diversion rate, they would induce 71.1% of the water they pumped would be coming from the river. When they turned that into a 365-day model, that percentage became 84.6%. So in short, their currently permitted volume of 45,165 acre-feet per year, plus this application, 8,277 acre-feet per year, so a total of 53,442 acre-feet per year. That means they would be inducing of that 53,000, so 45,211.9 acre-feet per year from the river. We also recognize there are other municipalities, such as the city of Yankton, which is near the river and does induce the recharge, and there was study as done as part of Yankton's getting a collector well. And we also recognize that there are a number of irrigators that are in very close proximity. What this really means for us is as we review applications coming in from the Missouri Elk Point Aquifer, we are taking the historic recharge rate that was done as part of the Corps of Engineers study by Hedges and others in the 1980s, which is approximately 3.8 inches per year over the aerial extent of the aquifer, and we're adding in the induced amount of recharge from Lewis and Clark Regional Water System for their currently active pumping permits, what their future use reserves as it will be developed as the system is still continuing to grow, and this application to determine recharge. So under current development, the historic recharge rate, that 3.8 inches per year, as done through Hedges, is 69,382 acre-feet per year. The amount that would be induced by full development of all of Lewis and Clark's existing permits, their future use reservations, and the current application before you would be an additional $45,211.9 as discussed, for a total of 114,593.9 acre feet per year. Currently under development, including future use, the Missouri Elk Point has, at the time of writing of my report, and there have been a number of applications to follow since then, the current usage from the aquifer was 100,255.3 acre feet per year. Those numbers can be found on page 10 of my report for review. As this application was unopposed, the chief engineer did recommend approval, so I don't know what actions may need to be taken upon this, but the chief engineer may have further comment, and I can certainly answer questions regarding the South Dakota State Geologic Survey review, or their report, or how we use that as part of our review process.
Eric, do you have any additional comment?
Just real briefly for the board, you know, generally on a water permit application, we have the ability to just schedule it in a manner that if nobody petitions to intervene, it's just approved based on the chief engineer's recommendation. However, there's a provision in law that if there's public policy or public interest issues involved, at my discretion, I can schedule it directly for the board. Again, as Adam noted, this was uncontested, but going into public notice, I think I wanted to highlight this South Dakota Geological Survey study and what we're doing just so that it's out there and on the table for everyone. So that's why I made the decision to actually schedule this for a board hearing today.
Thank you, Eric. Any questions by any board members?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Ms. Comas? Quick question, if I may.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Mr. Mathewitz or Mr. Gronlund, was reviewing the report and listening to your verbal report and looking at some of the numbers. It appears that there's approximately 14,000 acre feet still available for appropriation. Is that one quick takeaway from your comments?
At the time of writing my report, yes. I believe since then we have added several hundred acres of irrigation. I don't have that number off the top of my head. I know it's a number of applications, though. So reduce that 1,000 or 2,000 perhaps. But yes, that would be a quick takeaway.
Thank you. Is there a follow-up? Do we anticipate if applications continue to proceed, there could be a point in time where this aquifer may be considered fully appropriated?
As with all groundwater sources, at some point, yes, they can be fully appropriated. The question is, part of the study showed that, at least for the Lewis and Clark system, the inducement only extended approximately 1 mile from the river. So in terms of a mathematical aspect for a hydrologic budget, we could continue to start looking at individual irrigation applications or permits existing, but we're also going to rely on our observation well data and what that shows us. And if you look in my report, we are noticing, you know, we are counting for the entrenchment, you know, the flood events have caused on the Missouri River, as well as continual use of cutting the bed, but also widening of the channel. So you have the same flow rate through the river, yet you have reduced head level. So it wouldn't just be a hydrologic budget before that we would look at. We would also consider the observation well data if we got to a point we believe that the aquifer was at full appropriation.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the few comments. Thank you.
Well, this is Larson. Any other comments, questions by board members?
This is Dixon. I'm just curious. The models that were run to determine the percentages coming out of the river, that applicable only to that one area or the Missouri River, or would that those models apply to other rivers?
The model in detail is only applicable to the well field for Lewis and Clark at that place in the river, because it's dependent on the thickness of your aquifer materials, the head in the river during the time when they ran the model, the transmissivity, which is the hydraulic conductivity, how much water can move through a unit space, plus the thickness. So it can be broadly applicable to other portions of the Missouri Elk Point aquifer and give us indications for other water sources, but not specific, certainly not specifically, and even to use it in a somewhat specific manner in other places of the Missouri Elk Point aquifer would be, it would take some deep thought before we could consider whether we could use that or not.
Thank you.
Any additional questions or comments from board members? Hearing none, do I have a motion to adopt the chief engineer's recommendation of approving application 8614-3?
This is Comas, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Freeman, second.
Motion is adopted to approve the chief engineer's recommendation of approving application 8614-3. Can I have a roll call?
Comas?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye. The next item on the agenda is an appeal regarding an order granting a motion to dismiss by the pre-hearing chair regarding application number 2850-2. And Rodney, did you want to take the lead on this, or we're going to have testimony or argument from Ms. Hans Bailey?
Well, this is Rodney. I would presume that Ms. Hans Bailey would set forth the basis for her motion, and then the petitioners could set forth their position again for the benefit of the board. And then I could explain to the board why I made my ruling, and then the full board could make a decision whether to sustain my ruling or to do something different. That's the way I look at it. I don't know what Eric or anyone else, Matt or Ann, feel about it, but I'd be sure glad to proceed that way.
Now, this is Larson. I would agree with Rodney's assessment of procedure here. Anna, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Matt, can we see a Matt's
Mr.
On?
Chair? Mr. Chair?
Yes, yes, Mr. Naz.
Can you see me? I believe it's my understanding that Carla would like to be able to see us, and I am not as technically savvy as I should be.
Mr. Naz, I can see you just fine. Can the other board members see Mr. Nunez?
Dixon, I can see him.
Comas, I can see him.
Very good. Mr. Chair, before we continue, can I ask one question, sort of procedural question?
Yes, sir.
My understanding that Mr. Duvall sent around a supplement to the board packet, which included the documents attached to our response. And before we begin, I just wanted to inquire as to whether or not everyone had an opportunity to receive those documents and have those available for this morning's hearing.
This is the Chair Larson. I have received them. Other board members, you've had the ability to review the documents that Ron sent out yesterday with the supplemental packet.
Mrs. Comas, yes, I have received and reviewed.
Dixon, yes.
Anybody not had the ability to review the documents? Hearing none.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Nas?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ms. Bailey?
Thank you. This is Ann Mines Bailey on behalf of the Chief Engineer in the Water Rights Program. This matter is the Water Permit Application number 2850-2 for Elk Mountain Water Users Association, Inc. The matter was timely noticed pursuant to South Dakota Codified Law 46-2A-23. That particular section allows the chief engineer to issue a permit without hearing if there is no opposition to the chief engineer's recommendation. The section 23 requires that the notice be published as provided in section 46-2A-4, 1 through 8, and sub 12. Of particular importance to this matter is the requirement under 46-2A-4, and in my motion I mistakenly put sub 6. It's actually sub 4 sub C. And what that section requires is a statement in the notice that petitions to oppose must be received within 10 days of the published notice. Likewise, Administrative Rule Section 7402.01.12.04 requires that petitions must be postmarked or hand-delivered within 10 days of the published notice. In this particular matter, the notice was published in the appropriate legal newspapers on September 28 of 2022. The notice provided specifically that the petition deadline was October 11 of 2022. On October 28, just over 2 weeks after the deadline, Water Rights received the Martinez petition, and that petition was postmarked October 25th of 2022. Therefore, the petition is untimely, and that is the basis for our motion. I would like to also just provide a response right now for in interest of efficiency. One of the major concerns in the Martinez petition is the location of their well. When the technical review was performed by Kim Drennan, an engineer with Water Rights, she referred to the well completion database. And the well completion report on file noted the nearest domestic well to be in a different quarter section than what the Martinez petition indicated. With the Martinez petition, that well completion report, which was submitted by the well driller, has been corrected. Ms. Drennan has reviewed with the corrected location from the Martinez's, and that is what will be addressed and used during the petition hearing, during the contested case hearing, which will come in May. If there are any other questions, I will be here. But that is all I have. For those reasons, we have moved for dismissal of the petition.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Mr. Nas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. Matt Nas, I represent Tomas and Araclio Martinez. I'm here this morning with my clients, Araclio Martinez and his wife, Misty. As Ms. Mines Bailey indicated, this application seeks to divert 150 gallons per minute from the Madison Aquifer. As you all know, domestic well can only pump up to 25 gallons a minute for an average daily consumption or pumping of 18 gallons per minute. So this application is orders of magnitude greater than any domestic well that's in the location. The Martinez Ranch is adjacent to, essentially surrounds the property on which this proposed well site will be completed. The Martinez Ranch uses a domestic Madison Aquifer well for its ranch purposes. This well waters their cattle. They drink it, use it for all domestic purposes. It's essentially the lifeblood of their ranching operation at this location. The Exhibit C to our response to the Chief Engineer's motion to dismiss is, I think, a valuable tool which really illustrates the issue here this morning. The Martinez well is located roughly 900 feet from the proposed diversion point, from the proposed point of the diversion. When the notice of this application was published, it was published in newspapers, and we all know the efficacy of publishing notice in newspapers, but the statute is what the statute is. Martinez family was on vacation. There's an affidavit that's also attached to the response to the Chief Engineer's motion to dismiss stating that. When the Martinez family returned from vacation, a neighbor contacted them, informed them of the published notice, informed them of the quantity of water which was to be sought from this application. And shortly thereafter, the Martinez family filed their petition to intervene and oppose the application with the Chief Engineer's office. Ms. Mines Bailey indicated to you the date of that, I think it was October 25. Critically here, there's no prejudice to anyone involved regarding hearing the Martinez petition and allowing them to intervene. The hearing on the contested case hearing has been delayed now twice. We are in March. It hasn't been heard. There is plenty of time for the Martinez family to make its pre-trial, pre-hearing submissions of witnesses and exhibits prior to the contested case being heard. Neither the Chief Engineer nor any other party has alleged or come forward with any sort of allegation or even suggestion that they would be prejudiced by allowing the Martinez family to participate in this hearing. Ms. Bailey touched on this. The report to the Chief Engineer says that the nearest domestic well is 0.7 mile away from the proposed point of diversion. That's just not true. The point of diversion is 900 feet away from the Martinez well. The report to the Chief Engineer says that, quote, some drawdown from this application is likely to occur. If any drawdown occurs, it's going to occur at the Martinez Ranch, at the Martinez well, the closest well to this proposed point of diversion. If any drawdown occurs, it will impact the Martinez family ranching operation. They're unable to water cattle on specific pastures that utilize this well. They'll haul hay, they'll have to move cattle. There are real world impacts to potential drawdown at their well location. I think it's important to note too, what Ms. Mines Bailey indicated just a moment ago, and that is that the engineer, Ms. Drennan, I believe, who filed the report to the Chief Engineer, has updated her report to make it consistent with the location of the Martinez well. That is a change to the report. That's a change to this process. We haven't seen that. I believe fairness would allow then that, based on that update, that the Martinez family be allowed to participate. There's no jurisdictional bar to participation in either the statute or the rule. As it relates to the administrative rule cited in the order, I believe that is essentially a recitation of the mailbox rules application here and how the petition and intervention is to be filed. I don't know that an administrative rule could create a jurisdictional bar to participation in a contested case hearing at any rate. So it's the statute that I think we're most concerned with. And again, that statute does not say that a jurisdictional bar exists to participation if a petition is filed untimely. This board has in the past allowed untimely petitions and intervention to be allowed status. We've attached the situation, the circumstance in which that occurred with the Oglala Sioux Tribe and the Power Tech proceedings. That's Exhibit D to our response to the Chief Engineer's motion. Before you vote on this order, I want you to take a look. I'm asking you to please take a look at Exhibit C. This shows how close the proposed point of diversion is to the Martinez well. And we've heard in the past that this board has discretion to control its docket. And if that discretion is ever appropriately exercised, it's here where to disallow the Martinez family from participating when there's been no prejudice shown to any party would essentially silence the family ranches at this location who has the highest likelihood of being impacted by this diversion, by this proposed diversion. Affirming this order, and I understand the basis for the order, but affirming this order would essentially silence that family from being allowed to participate in this matter when they're the family that's going to be impacted most by this proposed diversion. Fundamental principles of fairness and due process will require, I think, the board to exercise its discretion here and allow the Martinez family to participate as full parties in this matter. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Ann Mines Bailey, if I may clarify.
Yes, ma'am.
I believe what I said was Ms. Drennan had reviewed with the corrected location from the Martinez. There has not been a new report. Our intention is to testify and present evidence at hearing consistent with the corrected location.
All right, thank you for the clarification there, Ms. Bailey. Mr. Freeman, do you have some comments then as to why you entered into this order?
Yes, just so the board understands my reasoning, I have a great deal of sympathy for Mr. and Mrs. Martinez, believe me. And if we had discretion, I would have said no to the motion to dismiss without hesitation, but we live with deadlines. We publish deadlines. They're deadlines established by the courts, and I don't believe we have jurisdiction or we don't have discretion in the matter of not granting the motion to dismiss, and that's the basis of my ruling. I think the language is mandatory. Whether you're looking at the administrative rule or whether you're looking at the statute. But I would also agree with Matt or Mr. that it is entirely within the board's discretion. You're not bound by my order. But again, my decision was based on the fact that I believe the rule and the law are mandatory and don't grant us discretion to do away with the deadline. And that's the basis for my decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Any comments, questions, concerns from the board?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Gomez.
I believe I know the answer to this, but in response or to Ms. Mines Bailey's comment that Ms. Drennan will testify to the correct location of the Martinez well, there's still no avenue for the Martinez parties to participate in that hearing if they're not a a party to it or a petitioner. Is that correct?
That is my understanding. Mr. Freeman, anything to add to that?
Well, I think they could certainly be called as witnesses by other parties if they wanted to, but other than as a witness, I don't believe there would be any other avenue for them.
I would agree with that.
Okay, thank you.
This is Dixon, and I too am very sympathetic to the issues here, since the Martinez well, it looks like the, you know, drawdown would occur at their well. But I also hesitate with setting a precedence for other people when there's blatant disregard for deadlines. I'm kind of torn.
Thank you, Ms. Dixon. Sympathetic as well, but concerned about setting precedent too.
I might, Mr. Chairman, this is Comas.
Yes.
I might solicit some conversation from the board related to the fact that indeed in the Drennan report, it appears that the location was misstated. I'll just use that term. So thereby, if that was a reason to deny Mr. Freeman's pre-hearing decision, it wouldn't be arbitrary, the reason to allow the Martinez to be a participating party. Is that I would appreciate some comments on that line of thinking. In other words, we're not setting a negative precedent, perhaps, because there's an apparent error or misstatement in the Drennan report. So in other words, there's a reason that we would allow a late petition to be considered, rather than just, oh, I just missed the deadline type scenario.
Yeah, this is Dixon. I kind of agree with that thought process, Chad. Am I understanding it right that the Martinez's don't agree with the comment that the location was in error?
Mr. Nas, can you provide us any clarification on that question?
As I understand the question, I believe it's fair to say that the Drennan report, as it was drafted and provided by the chief engineer, indicated that the closest domestic well was 0.7 miles south of this application in the southwest quarter, section 21, rest of the legal description, on April 5, 2001. The well completion report for the Martinez well was dated April 2001. It has the correct depth that it was drilled to, the correct depth that it identified the Madison Formation in. But for whatever reason, and I'm not certainly not suggesting anyone intentionally lied here or misrepresented anything, but I think the well completion report, the X in the well completion report upon which Ms. Drennan based her opinions, is not consistent with the actual location of the Martinez well, which is, 900 feet away from the proposed point of diversion. And it's my understanding, I'm certainly not trying to put words in the chief engineer's mouth or the water rights program's mouth, but I don't believe that the water rights program disagrees with the actual location of the well, and that for whatever reason, the well completion report, as it was filed 20 years ago, led them to believe that the Martinez well was elsewhere. I don't know if that answers the question.
Mr. Larson, would you like comment from the chief engineer as well?
This is a chair. So, Mr. Nas, the report is actually says 0.7 miles away, but in reality, it's 900 feet. That's your client's position from the point of diversion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and if you look at the exhibits to our response, if you look at Exhibit B, that was a map based on the well completion report, and that attempts to identify the distance between the proposed point of diversion and the location of the Martinez well as identified on the well completion report. I think the relevance is if you compare Exhibit B to Exhibit C. If you see on Exhibit B, if I can go back to that for a second, that identified it as 0.63 miles. Again, that's close to that 0.7. Then if you look at Exhibit C, that's a beacon, a GIS map, which is meant to estimate the distance between the proposed point of diversion and the Martinez well. You know, again, there's going to be some room for that number to change some, but I think the comparison between Exhibit B, which would be consistent with the well completion report as it was filed in the database of the Water Rights Program, and Exhibit C, which is the actual location of the well, illustrates the issue here. And I think it's also fair to say, and again, I don't want to testify here this morning, but there's no other well completion report on file close to the location identified as the Martinez well in Exhibit B. So I don't believe it's a situation where we've just got the wrong well. It's a situation where, for whatever reason, I mean, we all know what those well completion reports look like. It's an X and a quarter of a section identified, and you know, certainly there's room for inaccuracy there, and it looks like that's what happened here.
Thank you, Mr. Nas. And Mr. Chief Engineer, did you have some additional comments?
This is Ann Mines-Bailey. The report is based on the well completion logs that are submitted by well drillers. Those are supposed to be filled out at the time the well is drilled, and the driller has to put the location of the well. And in this instance, the location put it in a different quarter than where the Martinez's say the well is located. So it's the official document upon which Ms. Drennan rely puts it in a different quarter. I think we all know people make mistakes, and certainly we have no reason to disagree with what the Martinez's have said as to the actual location of the well, and we have proceeded with that. But I would push back against any suggestion that it is fault on Ms. Drennan's part. Those were the records that were before her and upon which we rely. And we're going to have the potential for that kind of error in every well log, well completion report that's filed.
Is it sure, man?
And again, I don't think this is the chair. I don't think there's any argument being made that there was an intent, but as Mr. Comas pointed out, I think it's still a mistake. Did you have something to add, Mr. Nas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only that no one is suggesting that Mr. Inman did anything incorrect. I entirely agree with Ms. Mines-Bailey that Ms. Drennan completed and filed her report based on the best information she had available. I think in this specific situation, however, it's been shown that information wasn't entirely accurate, and that's why that's one of the reasons we're here this morning. But certainly we are not suggesting that Ms. Drennan or anyone within the Water Rights Program did anything incorrect, or certainly intentionally incorrect.
Thank you, Mr. Nas, for that clarification.
This is Dixon. But Mr. Martinez did sign the well completion report, correct?
Mr. Chair, may I?
Yes, Mr. Nuss.
The well completion report is Exhibit A to our response. Ms. Dixon is correct. The signature is on the bottom of that page. I think that well completion report does it certainly illustrate that Mr. Martinez signed it. It also, I think, illustrates Ms. Mines Bailey's point about some confusion by the well driller or whomever as to the accurate legal description. If you look at the top left-hand corner of that document, there's been a correction to this to the section. But to your point, Ms. Dixon, that's true.
Dixon again. So when was that correction made from 16 to 21?
That's a good question. Do we know that?
Chairman, I do not know the answer to that question. I do not know when or by whom, frankly.
Then
who was that? I don't think that was. The last I got was, that's a good question. I don't know that.
I'm sorry. That was Matt.
What did you say?
I said, I don't know the answer to that question, when that correction was made or by whom.
Dixon again. So is neither 16 nor 21 is correct?
Mr. Chairman, this is Matt. It's my understanding that 21 is correct.
Ms. Bailey, a question for you. Did the engineer it utilized Exhibit A, correct? Which is the well completion report?
Yes. The engineer utilized Exhibit A. And the correct section is Section 21, according right. to our records.
Any other questions, comments, concerns from the board? Mr. Freeman, do you have anything additional to add?
No, thank you.
Does anyone have a motion to sustain the ruling by Mr. Freeman as pre-hearing chair, granting the motion to dismiss?
This is Comas. I'll make a motion to sustain.
Do I have a second on that motion to sustain? Well, hearing no second, this is my first meeting as chair.
This is Rodney R. Freeman. You might ask if there's a motion to overrule and permit them to intervene.
Just checking the statute, Ron. Is there a motion to overrule the order granting the motion to dismiss?
Uh, I think, Bill, again, this is Rodney.
Yeah.
I think when we set up the hearing officer, I think we had some internal rules on that. And I think it, you know, it may not be to overrule, it might be to set aside or something like that. And but if there isn't a motion to set it aside, then I think it stands.
Correct. I would agree with that. Well, hearing there's no motion to sustain or overrule the order granting the motion to dismiss the petition to intervene in application number 2850-2, it appears the order granting that motion to dismiss must be sustained.
This is Freeman. I would be glad to hear, since our counsel isn't here, I would be glad to hear what Ms. Hines Bailey and Mr. Naz have to say about that.
Ms. Bailey, do you have anything to add?
I think in the 9 years that Mr. Naz and I have been before the board, we haven't seen this before.
Of course, this would happen. I'm the first time I'm chair.
Right, yeah. Baptism by fire. I believe Mr. Freeman is correct. I think if there isn't a motion from the board to overrule or to reverse Mr. Freeman's ruling, that it stands.
Dixon here. So if we had a motion overruled, then we've got two motions on the table. Then what happens?
That would be my understanding.
Well, Freeman. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, nobody seconded the first motion to sustain it. So I would say that's off the table. I mean, it's still out there, technically. Would you agree, Rod?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Since there wasn't a second, there's no action to be taken on it.
Mr. Naz, any more comments from you as we allow Ms. Bailey to make some?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will echo Ms. Mines Bailey's comments that this is new. I guess my thought on it would be that this is an agenda item on today's agenda. It's an action item. I don't know, and I will be honest, I've not researched this. This is off the cuff. But I don't know that not taking action on an agenda item is procedurally correct. That procedure is maybe a strong word there. It's certainly not a civil procedure type of question, but that would be my thought.
Thank you, Mr. Naz.
This is Dixon. Just to complicate things, I make a motion to overturn.
Thank you, Ms. Dixon.
Yeah.
Is there a second to overrule or set aside the order granting the motion to dismiss?
This is Comas. Just so there can be a vote, I will second it.
And I think we should have a vote on this. And you're seconding the motion to overrule, Mr. Comas?
Yes, sir.
I don't know what that means to overrule.
What was that? I think we need to have a vote of the board members.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Comas?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
I think I am going to abstain since it's my ruling. I think there'd be a conflict for me to vote on it.
I would agree with that.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
And Larson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Ms. Bailey.
In light of the fact that the Martinez's will now be allowed to participate in the upcoming contested case proceedings in May, the chief engineer would request that new deadlines be given specifically for the Martinez's so that they would be able to disclose any expert witness and disclose witness list and exhibits prior to the contested case hearing, as the other parties have already done so. And I would suggest April 10 as a deadline for disclosure of experts, and April 21, I believe, would give Mr. Duval sufficient time and the parties sufficient time if Mr. Nas could disclose witnesses and exhibits on that day.
So April 10 for experts, and what was the second date, Ms. Bailey?
April 21 for witnesses and exhibits.
Mr. Nas, any comments?
No objection to those dates, Mr. Chairman. That sounds good.
We need to do an amended scheduling order then, Ms. Bailey?
I could draft an order. Would it be the board's intent that those dates be only for the Martinez's?
That would be my intent, yes. As chair, that would be my recommendation. The other parties have already submitted everything, correct?
Correct.
And I'm not going to, I do not believe we can extend their deadlines. These would only apply to the Martinez, the April 10 and April 21 deadlines.
I can draft an order for signature either by yourself or by the pre-hearing chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Anything to add to that, Mr. Nas?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments from any of the other board members? Well, it looks like all of our agenda meetings have been, all our agenda item has been covered, including a first in 9 years. do we have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Freeman, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Dixon,
Holzbauer, second.
And a roll call, please.
Thomas?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Larson.
Aye. Meeting is adjourned. Aye.